The following podcast is brought to you by The Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
It's wonderful to see everyone. I love being able to just be part of this community and to feel a sense of community with all of you. Though I will admit, as the pandemic moves into its sixth month, I'm missing face-to-face contact a little bit. How's it going with you? Are things going well? Or are you having a hard time? I find it's a little bit of both for me. On the positive side, I love working from home. I haven't been into New York City since March, when our company closed our offices. I realize that not everyone has the privilege of working from home, but for me, not having to commute into the city is such a blessing. I find that I don't miss all of the rushing around that I used to do. I love seeing people in person, but it's nice not to have to burn fossil fuels hauling my body around. Now that we're entering, we're approaching fall, I love walking outside in the morning and feeling the nip in the fall air. Sarah and I have done a couple of hikes together and with friends recently, and it's really, really sweet. You can social distance on a hike, so it's something you can actually do with other people and feel safe. Three of our nieces and nephews started their first year of college. I'm not their parent, I'm just an uncle, but I'm so proud of them. Of course, they all have their challenges, but it's just, I guess that first year of college is just a real turning of the Dharma wheel in their lives. And it's, I feel privileged to be a part of it. I guess another reason I'm kind of okay with being quarantined is that I'm easily amused. My nephew sent me a text message the other day about what he would do if he had a pet raccoon. Now, I'm not sure where this idea came from. It probably came because I texted him a picture of the raccoons we feed outside our garage. And I know you're not supposed to feed them, but we love watching them eat. We love watching the way their little mouths and noses move when they're picking up the cat crunchies. So I texted him a picture of our three raccoons. They're not our raccoons, they're just raccoons, but they live somewhere in the neighborhood. And in his text, he said something about raccoons, rabbits, skunks, and possums being rodent-like creatures. So I spent the next 10 minutes looking up, well, among other things, whether raccoons are actually rodents. They're not. And then I got curious to see, well, what are rodents? What are actually rodents? So mice, rats, squirrels, chipmunks, prairie dogs, hamsters, gerbils, beavers, capybara, those are rodents. They're rodents because of something with their teeth. They're gnawing animals. And so I'm texting back and forth with my nephew about what rodents are and what raccoons are. And then I got sidetracked looking up the word vermin. So, I mean, who uses that word anyway? I guess it came up in my search. I think only landlords use the word vermin. Cover your trash, you're attracting vermin. So vermin is not a scientific classification. They are animals that humans consider to be pests. So the definition of what are considered to be vermin varies from place to place. In some parts of this country, they're called varmints. So this was a very amusing 10 minutes for me, socially distanced, texting back and forth with my nephew and reading about vermin. Some things are going well, despite the pandemic. And yet, I know what's going on in the world. I think the one that perhaps is most distressing this week, I know it's very distressing to Sarah, is that there are record-breaking wildfires burning in the American West. 5 million acres of land, almost the size of the state of New Jersey, are destroyed. Whole neighborhoods have been reduced to ash. I don't know what the body count is right now. I'm sure it's in the over 30. It was 15, and then it was 22, and then it keeps growing. Countless animals have died or lost their habitat. And as if that was not enough, I mean, there are actually, I believe that there are foreign governments that are spreading rumors that Antifa is running around setting fires. And that's why all this is happening, just as if those people are not going through enough. Mukan sent a link around a week or two ago. Protesters in American cities are being attacked by outsiders while the police stand and watch passively. And that's including New York City. The article he sent was from Gothamist. I read an article about ICE detainees, and ICE continues to keep people in detention despite the tremendous risks they have of being confined during a pandemic. ICE actually has the legal latitude to let those detainees return to their families, or even to wear an ankle bracelet while they're waiting for their cases to be adjudicated. The law doesn't prevent them from doing any of that. But that's not what's happening. And of course, the pandemic rages on, with no really well-established treatments or a vaccine, disrupting lives and livelihoods. Just to illustrate how, you know, kind of, I think the pandemic will permeate our consciousness for many years to come. Yesterday I was feeling kind of achy and feverish. I took my temperature four times with two different thermometers, just because, you know, I'm actually fine, I think, but, you know, there's that lingering fear that, you know, I've been out a few times and who knows, you know, who knows. And in 50 days from today, it's election day. Arguably, this is the most important election of a lifetime. And I'm terrified about what might happen. So how's it going with you? Not so well. Not so well. In preparing for this talk, I found myself thinking about Dogen's words. To forget the self is to be actualized by myriad things. So that's just one line in a verse. I'll read the verse in a minute. But it occurred to me as I was working with this that it means all the things, nothing left out. It's the comfort of sleeping in late in the morning because I don't have to commute, and the fear of not knowing what the election will bring. Now, this is not the way my controlling ego would like it to be. I'd like to be actualized by only the good things. But that's not what Dogen is pointing at. And coincidentally, it's not how life works. So the whole verse is, to study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be actualized by myriad things. When actualized by myriad things, your body and mind, as well as the bodies and minds of others, drop away. No trace of realization remains, and this no trace continues endlessly. So it's interesting, I've heard these words so many times, I almost don't listen, but I don't actually think I've ever really thought about them. And as I was thinking about them, it occurred to me that Dogen is describing the experience of Kensho. Ken means seeing, Kensho means seeing essence or seeing true nature. It's a step along the Bodhisattva path where we first have a glimmer of insight. So let's break it down a little bit. To study the Buddha way is to study the self. When we first start to sit, the self is inescapable. It's very, very noisy, which makes it hard to settle down. But over time, we learn that this self is ever-changing. It's not a thing. Am I the same self that I was as a child? My mind maintains an illusion of continuity. And there are things about me that are the same, but I'm not the same person I was. While the self doesn't really exist, nonetheless, we are addicted to it. And so we must return to the cushion time and again, training our minds. And occasionally, we forget the self. To study the self is to forget the self. One day, after sitting for some time, we find ourselves in a quiet place where we are wide awake, but there is no I. We are breathing, just breathing. When the bell rings, we are the ringing. The experience may last for just an instant, may last for a while. Eventually, ego comes rushing back, tries to grab onto the experience, to label about it, to label it, to brag about it, to understand it. None of that's important. The only thing that's really important is that we come back to the cushion again and again. To forget the self is to be actualized by myriad things. This sentence captures our lives as just flowing, just interdependence, without separation. The alarm clock sounds, you roll over and hit the orange snooze button in the center of the screen. You settle in for another 9 minutes of sleep. Maybe settle back into a dream. The alarm clock sounds again. This time you hit the smaller button that turns off the alarm. You settle in for a few more minutes. Then you grab the bedpost and swing your legs out of bed. Glasses on, pull on your shorts, pull on socks and slippers, phone in pocket, pee. Who is this? Who is this? The morning flows. There's no one rolling out of bed. No one is eating breakfast. Our life is actually ordinary, and yet we are present and awake to it. In the ox herding pictures, this is returning to the original place. There's a poem as part of the ox herding pictures that goes like this. My very own treasure is uncovered. All those efforts spent in vain. It would have been better to be blind, deaf, and dumb. The mountains and water are just as they are. So is the bird among the flowers. As Martine Batchelor says, all this practice just to realize what is on our very doorstep. When actualized by myriad things, your body and mind, as well as the bodies and minds of others, drop away. Body and mind dropping away. So many of our Zen stories emphasize not knowing. The Zhang's not knowing is most intimate. The monk Fayan was going on pilgrimage. Master De Zhang asked, where are you going? Fayan said, on pilgrimage. Zhang asked, "Why?" Lian said, "I don't know." Zhang said, "Not knowing is most intimate." Roso is not understanding. Roshi spoke about this koan from the Book of Serenity just a couple of weeks ago. What is the mind from which the wish-fulfilling jewel is obtained? Nansen answered, "That in me which comes and goes with you is it." And after a further exchange, Nansen says, "Leave. You don't understand my words." Can you understand them? Can you? Bodhidharma's reply to the emperor's question, "Who is it before me?" "I don't know." We think we know so much. Who we are, how to tie our shoes, how to sing a song, how to conduct a meeting, who our significant other is, what we think of our neighbors, our professional identity, our gender identity, our politics, what is right and wrong, our politics. Zen asks us to drop body and mind. You may have noticed I mentioned politics. This is a time of tremendous partisanship, of great division in this country. And many of us are full-on focused on seeing that Donald Trump is not reelected. This is so important to me on so many levels. And if you care about the results of this election, I urge you, please do not be complacent. There is a lot you can do. Other than giving money, I'm making calls for the Biden campaign. I don't know whether it helps or not. So far, I haven't won any converts, but it's what I can do. One aspect of my practice is that I try to engage with my conservative and libertarian family and friends, and with my progressive and radical leftist family and friends as well, those who will talk with me. I find it helps to understand where they're coming from. This is also being actualized by myriad things. It's not easy. I'm not always the most skillful. I find that my ability to be calm and open-minded is directly in proportion to the calmness and open-mindedness of the person I'm talking with. Otherwise, I can get pretty shrill. I've been told by members of my family not to talk about politics. Talk about anything else, you can't talk about politics. I think I've finally learned that I can't engage people on social media who have a different opinion from me. I don't know why I'm so dense. It just took me a long time to learn that. It's partly me, but I think it's mostly social media. I'm a Facebook friend with someone who I knew as a kid. He posts articles all the time that just infuriate me. I think he thinks of himself as principled and objective, but so many of the articles, at least from my perspective, are poorly researched, if at all. They're just red meat for his fellow conservatives. And so I used to respond to them sometime to see if I could engage with him in a real dialogue. Sometimes just debate him. I mean, this was a kid that I knew when I was 7 years old, and I think I regressed a bit. And finally, he told me to stop. I'll read a little bit of what he said. He said, "You've proved time and again," this is about me, "that you're either unwilling or unable to defend your position. All you can do is cast aspersions at others. I'm proud to call you my friend, but it's absolutely pointless to discuss politics with you because you can't or won't debate, and you're so blinded by ideology that you can't see the very real flaws in your own side. Keep your hatred for Trump, you're welcome to it, but I'm not interested in discussing it with you. Wallow in your own ignorance to your heart's content, but do it on your own page, not here. I've never responded to any of your posts on your page, no matter how outrageously wrong I thought them to be. I expect the same courtesy. The Democratic Party is pure evil. I would have thought that you would be smart enough to see it, but that's not the case. I hope and pray that there continue to be enough good and decent Americans that can save this country from you useful idiots and the evil that you support. So I actually don't see much of myself in the way he describes me, but I probably deserved the message. But look at where we've gotten to. Social media is a platform for proclaiming what we know, not for listening. It's standing on a soapbox and putting out something. Maybe we've not even read it. And we're not interested in hecklers, not like the people that were actually on the soapboxes back in the 19th century. But we'll never heal this country if we don't talk to each other. If our knee-jerk reaction is that the other side is pure evil. If our knee-jerk reaction is that people can be divided into my side and the other side. And even if Trump is defeated, our divisions are not going away. I don't know how we do it, but we have to learn to listen to each other, to get back to treating each other with respect, and to find as much common ground as we can. To study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be actualized by myriad things. To be actualized by myriad things, all the things. So in the spirit of recognizing and being actualized by division, I'll end with the lyrics of a little country song, not from the Zen tradition, but okay. So it's a song by the Judds. I'll gladly walk across the desert with no shoes upon my feet to share with you the last bite of bread I had to eat. I would swim out to save you in your sea of broken dreams. When all your hopes are sinking, let me show you what love means. Love can build a bridge between your heart and mind. Love can build a bridge. Don't you think it's time? Don't you think it's time? Thank you for your practice.